From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Research on bird populations published in fall 2019 was alarming. 29% of all birds in the U.S. and Canada have vanished since 1970, a drop of 2.9 billion birds in our lifetime. In light of such news, Cornell Lab of Ornithology says it's more vital than ever that citizen scientists, like all of us gardeners, monitor their own backyard birds and share their sightings. Today's guest, the leader of Cornell Lab's Project Feeder Watch, will tell us more about changing bird populations and also about how data from bird watchers helps, plus best practices for feeding birds this winter and more. But first, this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Emma Gregg is the leader of Project Feeder Watch at Cornell University's Lab of Ornithology in Ithaca, New York, which for more than 30 years has fostered connections between people and birds, and also between bird watchers and scientists who benefit from all those extra sets of eyes to help them get a closer look at bird population changes over time. Hi, Emma.
Hi, Margaret. Thanks for having me on.
I've been participating for such a long time, so you don't have to convince me. But yeah, I love Feeder Watch and other such citizen scientist opportunities. As I said in the intro, Emma, even experts in the field of ornithology and conservation were kind of shocked by the recent numbers about bird decline when that report was published in the journal Science in September, right?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise to all of us, even though I think in the back of a lot of our minds we knew that lots of species were in decline.
Yeah.
Really see the magnitude of it through this paper was eye-opening to everybody.
I think John Fitzpatrick, the director of the Lab of Ornithology at Cornell, said the report is our wake-up call. And so what do you think it kind of wakes us up to need to do more, to look at? And what are you thinking about even more?
I think that it really needs to, or it wakes us up to our need to recognize our impact on the environment and to really think about what we're doing on an individual basis and collectively to be influencing these changes in bird populations. But also, really, it's like the canary in the coal mine, right? It's not just the birds that are changing, but it's the environment that's changing as well.
Right. Well put. So can you just give us, and I know this study wasn't a Project Feeder Watch study, but can you just give us some of the sort of top line findings for people who may not have read about it that struck you? It wasn't just some rare birds that were being affected at all, was it?
That's exactly right. So the declines that the researchers observed were from Christmas bird counts and breeding bird surveys.
Yes.
So these long-term citizen science data sets. And they looked at what families of birds were showing declines and were showing increases through time. And most of the families that they looked at had declines. Hmm. So this includes sparrows, blackbirds, warblers, birds that include species we see in our backyards all the time.
Yes.
So that's part of what is so surprising about it. We're still seeing these birds, but we're seeing fewer of them. And so it's kind of, in some cases, this subtle effect that you probably wouldn't notice if you didn't have these long-term data sets with bird counts collected in a really consistent way.
So I might still see a particular type of sparrow each year and put it in my findings, but I might see three instead of seven, and I'm just making up numbers, but the groups that are being recorded each time there is a sighting of a particular species may be smaller.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. And is this just the tropical migrants, or is it also, birds that are kind of stick around, seem to be here more, don't go all the way to the tropics during the winter from our northern areas? Or
Yes, it includes both.
Mm-hmm.
So migrants are really high on the list of species that are suffering, and I think that makes a lot of sense because just think of all the habitat that a migrant needs. It needs breeding habitat, it needs far away wintering habitat, and it needs stopover habitat for the trip. So you can imagine why migrants are not faring very well in the face of habitat loss.
Right.
But we also are seeing declines in some really common species, like blue jays and juncos. Juncos are the most frequently reported species in Project Cedar Watch.
Oh.
It's such a surprise that they're declining, but they are. And so this paper was just like opened our eyes to what's actually happening to species that we think are doing just fine.
Right. I mean, if based on what's going on under my feeder the last 10 days or so since I was able to put the feeders out, or I risked putting them out when I was hoping the bear, the black bear, were not going to show up. Some of us in rural areas have to be, well, even not so rural areas in some cases, but where I am, bears just walk around, you know, like they walk down the road. It doesn't even matter.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it is cool, but it is a little startling when... You know, you're right. You go to fill the feeder, and there's someone out there, like, holding on to the feeder and bending the pole with, like, one finger, you know?
Oh, my gosh. That would really give me a startle.
They're strong guys. But when I put them out, you know, what happens almost instantly, and I always wait till I see the first juncos kind of looking around, and lots of juncos will be under the feeders, you know, mostly feeding on the ground. And, you know, but so I wouldn't have thought until I read the report, I would not have thought that that was a bird that was in decline.
Yeah, there really were some surprises in this report for all of us.
So the project you direct is called Feeder Watch, and I think it's been in existence since 1987 maybe, so it's 32-ish years, is that right?
Yep, that's right. This will be the 33rd year this winter that the program has been going on in its current form.
And so people register, they make a small donation to the lab, I think, and they get program materials. And just tell us sort of what is it just roughly that people do?
Well, roughly it's a bird counting program, sort of like the Christmas Bird Count or the Breeding Bird Survey.
Mm-hmm.
But with Feeder Watch, people can count their birds all winter long. So it gives a really good look at what's happening at any given location because there are these repeated observations that people make.
Mm-hmm. So it's like November to April-ish, right? Is that what it is, November to April?
Yep, that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And people can count as often as every week, but it's also very helpful to count, even if you can only count a few times all winter, that still gives us a really good idea of what's happening, just to have a couple repeated counts. And my point, I'm saying this because it's very flexible.
Mm-hmm.
You can really count as much or as little as you like to accommodate your schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the program's really nice in that respect.
How many people participate in a given year? Is there a rough number?
Yeah, there are these days about 20,000 people in the U.S. and about 3,000 in Canada that participate in the program every year.
And Bird Studies Canada is the entity that's like the partner in Canada to Cornell, is that right?
Yep, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
We've been working together since 1986 to run this program.
Wow. So over those years, you two entities have accumulated a lot of data. We were just talking about some data that's been analyzed for part of this other research that was published in the journal Science, but so you have all this data, and you had already kind of been drawing conclusions about some shifts in populations of birds. And one that I think about, I'm a northern person. I'm in the Hudson Valley, Berkshires area of sort of New York, Massachusetts area. And 30 years ago, when I first used to put out my feeders in the winter, I would have tons of evening grosbeaks, for instance, and I'd have pine siskins galore. And those are two birds that evening grosbeak, I can't remember the last time I saw one in my area, though there are reports not too far away from me. And pine siskins are an occasional visitor now. Are those the kind of birds that you or two examples of the kinds of things you've noticed differences? Or what are some of sort of the highlights or lowlights of differences that you've noticed in your data over the 30 years?
Yeah, those two that you mentioned are really good examples. Within Feeder Watch, we have seen the striking decline of evening grosbeaks, and that was something that also they noticed in the science paper. So that's kind of really confidence-boosting, I think, when all these different citizen science efforts lead us to the same conclusions about what's happening with birds.
Any sense of what the factors are? And I know that people counting birds doesn't give you a conclusion. It's not the analysis part. But based on other research or whatever, are there any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that people suspect has a great deal to do with the changes in bird populations are changes in habitat.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of grassland species are in decline, and those are species that live in places that are being converted to agriculture. So the habitat is changing, and agriculture often includes a lot of pesticide use,
right,
which can then impact insect populations and therefore downstream impact bird populations. So habitat use and pesticide use are two things that people suspect are playing a role in these bird declines, but it's really hard to draw tight conclusions between an effect and a decline because there is so much happening simultaneously for birds, and different species respond to different things in different ways. So it's just real tough to make sweeping statements about what is causing the decline.
Right, and then the whole climate shifting in the profound ways that it has that we read about every day. And those of us who have been, say, gardening or doing some outdoor activity in a given area over a period of time have noticed, you know, and even just living somewhere, you probably noticed drastic changes. The ranges of birds also seem to change, don't they? I mean, the like where birds go to, and I guess I'm sort of thinking about, I don't remember, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't remember black vultures being as far north as they are now when I began birding. You know, I don't remember them being a common thing. Now they're an everyday thing in season in my area with the turkey vultures, for instance. It's just one that pops into my head. But are birds' ranges also changing? Is that something that you notice through your data set?
Yes, they absolutely are changing, and that's a really good example with the black vulture. Some other species that people might be noticing now that they didn't notice 10 or 20 years ago are Carolina wrens.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, these little wrens didn't used to be in, say, Michigan or New York in the winter, but now they're sticking around all year round and really exploding in their range and their population. And they're very sensitive to cold snaps. So we think the reason they're able to persist in these more northern latitudes is because winters are becoming more mild in some places. And so we can absolutely see this effect of changes in climate on changes in birds.
Hmm.
And it's interesting because in some cases, ranges are actually expanding. So some species are doing better than they used to be doing, but then other species, northern, more cold latitude birds, are not necessarily doing so well.
Hmm.
So there's definitely a change that's happening for a lot of birds.
I'll tell, I'm going to say in quotes, my Carolina wren, who entertains me much of the day at the moment, adorable bird. I'll tell him or her that we talked about him or her today.
Okay, good.
And I have hermit thrush too.
Oh yeah, that's another good one.
Yeah, yep. And I don't know if that's always been one that stays around in winter or not. It seems like maybe not. Maybe that's always been the case. I don't know, but I tend to have them in the winter even now too.
Yeah, they do tend to stick around in winter, and it's surprising because we think of thrushes as birds that migrate, and they do a bit, but hermit thrushes, they can handle a little bit of cold weather.
Yeah. What about, you know, a lot of people cringe at the thought of this, but there are certain hawks that will hunt at bird feeders and pick off songbirds, and people feel terribly guilty like they've caused the death. And So what about, like, say, Cooper's hawks? Have they sort of learned that feeders are a good source of food, and have they changed their wintering ranges as a result? Or is this just they've always been around in winter because I see more of them, too, or I feel like I see more of them?
You do see more of them.
Okay.
They've shown a really big increase in their winter range and their range as a whole over the past couple of decades. Cooper's hawks are really thriving.
Huh.
And sharp-shinned hawks thriving, maybe not quite to the degree that Cooper's hawks are, but we think that it may have to do with them figuring out that backyard bird feeders are a really good source of food. So they're actually thriving. And I guess people have to decide if they want to feel good or bad about that. But hawks are birds, too. So I feel like, in a way, it's kind of cool to have them in your backyard and the whole circle of life happening at your feeders.
I mean,
I know it can be a little brutal.
It is. But it was Pete Dunn, I think, the ornithologist, who said to me in an interview years ago when I said, ooh, creeps me out. And he said, Margaret, that hawk would have eaten a songbird somewhere else that day. You know, it was going to eat a songbird. It's what it eats.
Right.
So exactly. Yeah, it's going to do it in front of you. You witnessed it, but it was going to eat one somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So that I always keep that in mind. So we've been saying feeder watch and feeder. What's a feeder bird? And you know, because what feeder watch is about is watching birds, I think, in our quote backyards, right? It's not about going out birding, go climb a mountain somewhere in some remote area, is it?
No, what you're saying is correct. It's about watching the birds in our backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the way people see the most birds in their yard is by putting out some sort of food source.
Uh-huh.
And so often the feeder birds are birds that like seeds, or hummingbirds that like nectar. It's more those foraging guilds than, for example, insectivorous species that are there a little harder for us to put out a tray of little gnats because those are all going to fly away. So it's these granivorous species and nectar and fruit-eating species that we typically think of as feeder birds. And that's what folks tend to report the most for Project Feeder Watch. However, I really encourage folks to participate even if they don't have feeders out, because we can still learn a lot about what's happening with birds even when there aren't feeders.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to. We want to know what's the difference between a backyard with a seed feeder and a backyard that just has native plantings or maybe a bird bath and no seed feeders. So I think that backyards that are planted for birds but not necessarily full of feeders are just as valuable a peek into what's happening with birds.
And what's the right way to feed, really? I mean, my garden is kind of planted for habitat, so there are animals eating all kinds of things there all the time. But I have unfrozen water 365 days a year, you know, water I have a de-icer in, and that seems to really increase the number of birds that participate and other animals as well. That utilize the garden and that I think of as my, quote, feeder birds. What's kind of the right – are there any rules quickly for, you know, good feeding protocol?
Yes, I think that a good way to think about it is you want to feed birds the way that you might feed guests that are coming over to your house. So you're going to feed fresh, healthy food, clean plates, and you're going to give them a safe environment to come visit. And so that's what we want to do for birds, too. Provide fresh food, whether it's seed or fresh nectar that you've mixed up. Provide it in clean feeders that have drainage so that seed doesn't just sit in a wet pool of water but instead can dry. And it's really good to provide habitat either in the form of bushes or brush piles in your yard, so that the birds have some place to perch and hang out before coming to a feeder. And that gives them a more cover for evading those Cooper's hawks that are probably hanging out too.
Yes. is sunflower the like highest value food? I mean, if you're going to feed one thing, is that kind of the best for generally?
Yeah, sunflower is a great seed. Lots of birds like it, and it's very fatty and oily, so it provides a lot of calories per bite for the birds. Thistle, also called Niger seed, that's another really good one for attracting a wide variety of species with just one simple seed type.
Yeah, the finches seem to really like it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And what about with the counting? What's the right way to count? Because I think I read, I remember some blog posts, I think, on the Lab of Ornithology website. I feel like there was this anecdote about how, like, the British ornithologists or whatever, researchers regretted not counting sort of really familiar birds like house sparrows, and that sort of came back to bite them, like not having that data. And, you know, a lot of us are inclined to just, oh, I saw an unusual bird. And like we go and we count. We write that down, but we don't write down the everyday stuff. What's the right way to count to help you to be good citizen scientists?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And Feeder Watch is really designed to teach people how to count in a way that will be really informative to understanding changes in birds. And so what that right way is to count no matter what's there. So if you look out your window and there aren't many birds there, well, that's still really valuable because we want to know, well, what's going on in the environment on the days when there aren't many birds, just as much as we want to know what's going on in the environment when there are lots of birds.
Right.
You really can't have one without the other. So for people to choose their count days and count no matter what and report whatever they see, even if it doesn't feel exciting, that is what ends up leading to really great long-term data sets that are a really good representation of what's actually happening with the birds.
Okay. So I shouldn't just put down something I'm really excited about because that doesn't show the real situation in my backyard on a continuum at all.
Right. Because if you imagine looking at a bunch of counts where you only wrote down when this super rare bird showed up, well, someone coming and looking at those counts later would see that rare bird shows up every time you look, and they might... Actually,
right.
It would seem like that rare bird is actually common.
Right.
So, that's what we want to be able to tease apart and by having people just count no matter what is out there and not bias their counts towards rare things.
Oh, good thinking. So in the last, 2 minutes, I wanted to ask you, here you are. It's already well into November when we're speaking, and so people have been sending in their sightings and you're looking at what's coming in, the pulse of things. And we were just talking about exciting birds. Are there birds you're really looking and you're, especially in the wake of all this research coming out and so forth, that you're especially looking to see what's happening with them that are on your radar?
One of the groups that I've been really interested in lately are hummingbirds.
Mm.
And we have seen that Anna's hummingbirds, which are a species on the West Coast, are expanding their winter range tremendously. And it seems to be associated with human development, people putting out bird feeders. So I'm also really interested in understanding if, say, ruby-throated hummingbirds are also overwintering a little bit more in the United States instead of flying across the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
In response to climate change and in response to people keeping their feeders out longer. So those are some that I'm just really keeping my eyes on are hummingbirds and the interaction between hummingbirds and people.
Interesting. Well, what I'll do with the transcript of the show, Emma, is I'll give all the links, and there's other bird counts, as you said, that people can participate in, and there's ebird.org that people can join and put down their counts any day. So I'll give all that information as well as how to join Feeder Watch from now through April. I really appreciate your taking the time today. Thank you so much for visiting the show.
Oh, Oh, I appreciate being on it so much, and thank you for running such a good show.
I'll tell my Ren that you said hello.
Great.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Thanks to all of you for listening, and don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify, and you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and Instagram as @awaytogarden. Happy gardening and birding meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.